You're listening to the Digital Forensics Files podcast with your host, Tyler Hatch from DFI Forensics. Are you a lawyer who wants to learn about how you can use digital forensics in your modern day lawsuit? Great. Go to dfiforensics.ca to learn more. If you have questions about your particular case, we'd love to hear from you. Consultations are always free. So email us or call us today. Hello and welcome to the Digital Forensics Files podcast. I am your host, Tyler Hatch from DFI Forensics. Today, I'm excited to have a guest on the show by the name of Stephen Corden. Stephen is all the way from the UK, and he's the manager at Deloitte. He is a digital forensics expert, and he specializes. He's got a very unique kind of take on the field. Stephen, you specialize in process automation, and you've gotten a number of other good things that we're going to talk about today. So thanks for taking the time out to be here. How are you doing today?
Great. Yeah, really good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. With that introduction, is there anything that I missed there? What is your current role and what are you doing in the field specifically today?
Yeah, no, it's a good cover. So I work within essentially the e-discovery litigation and dispute team within Deloitte. But my areas of expertise are certainly expanded over the time in my role there. So I'm quite heavily involved with, as you say, process automation, working with different digital forensic technologies, and also having another level of business analysis, sort of bringing that sort of skill set into our work with our clients from a digital forensic practitioner perspective as well. So it really is quite a broad mix of levels that I sort of operate at, which are all sometimes quite unique.
So your background, I mean, you did like kind of traditional and probably still do like traditional digital forensics work, but describe for the audience and perhaps even for myself, what exactly is the process automation aspect of what you do?
Yeah, sure. So as you say, I had five years of pure computer forensic analyst undertaking digital forensic police work, essentially, where I really learned the technical aspects of my trade. And so now expanding that to a slightly broader level. But the process automation piece is partly what it says in terms of a lot of the work that we undertake from a digital forensic perspective is often quite repetitive. There's a number of sometimes quite mundane tasks that we have to go through with working with certain pieces of technology, or if we're doing a certain type of investigation, it will go through the same certain processes with the same technology every single time. And the automation piece is essentially looking at how our investigation works and what the flow of would be for the data and for the applications that we use, and then looking at how we can add on automation or streamline those processes essentially to enable things to run with a little less human intervention at the rather boring, mundane button clicking side of things.
Right. I think that's awesome because you're right. There's several aspects of what we do that is similar and it's equally there in a lot of different cases. One of the things that comes to my mind when I think about automation is we're eliminating human error, but also I imagine then it invites some challenges to the work that you're doing when you're not there specifically supervising everything that you're doing. Have you ever come up with any of those kind of challenges, say in court or anything like that?
Not quite as such, because I think from what we've found is, I guess it's always good to have that experience behind you. And this takes me back to some of the NCASE training from way back, where I always remember you're taught how to do it at a granular level, at a very manual level. Mm-hmm. And only then, once you've been through that experience, you're given the script that does it for you. And yeah, you're given that knowledge. But everything is always, even when you're automating processes, it's still based on an underlying process that has to happen. So it's important that the people that are undertaking an automation understands actually what's happening under the hood. But in essence, you can always break down what is happening to its component parts and sort of discover if there is an interrogation from a court perspective to look at something in particular that's happened. You can always break it down from a code level perspective to say, well, here are the steps. And everything breaks down into smaller right. and granular steps at the end of the day. And that's what you can represent, whether it's been done by a script or done by a human, really.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's really good. What's it like to set something like that up? Like you mentioned scripts and things like that. What are some of the other tools that you might use to set up that kind of automation?
I mean, so automation field is quite vast nowadays. And if you look at the slightly wider business level, there's a lot of talk around RPA and robotics. And you've also got your natural scripting languages and where you'd be working within Visual Studio to write code. And you've also got your applications that sometimes have their own programming within it, NCASE being an example, and X-Ways as well. So I think it's quite a challenging question, because it often depends on what it is you need to achieve. Is you sort of have to make the use of the tools that you've got available that will help achieve it, and mm-hmm. and that's a real challenge within the area. Is you have to be very sort of adaptable, really. And right. one of the things I do like to teach, really, when I'm talking about this, is that you don't necessarily need to be an expert in coding in every single language or every single certain language or in every single type of interface. But if you can take with you this fundamental approach of how to write code and how to automate processes, you understand that you need to take this input. It has to go through a certain loop to be extracted in a certain way, to be manipulated in a certain way, and then you get your output, and then you do something with that output. If you sort of can work out that workflow, you can then apply that to whatever programming language, whatever application, whether mm-hmm. it's robotics, whether it's in Python, whether it's in C# or Java. If you can break it down sort of procedurally, you can then apply whatever language you need to get the job done at the end of the day.
Yeah, very, very true. Stephen, how long have you been in the field, and how did you get into the field?
Yeah, so I've been working in forensics for, I think it's about 11 years now. How did I get into the field? Through fluke more than anything else, through a vague interest in what sounded like a good degree. So I'm actually one of the few fortunate people who actually have a career in the industry that I actually trained in and got a degree in. Right. So I simply had a degree in computer forensics at university. I was originally looking for data science and maths, sort of a joint honours, but when I found the curriculum for digital forensics, it met what I wanted. I wanted something that was a little bit more applicable, that felt like it might give me tools to get a practical job quite soon.
Right, right.
And so that really appealed for me for the training. And I was fortunate and had a few people support me. And for any of your listeners at uni, I did a placement year, which actually made who I am today, getting that really early experience in my third year at university. And that sort of got me in the industry, essentially. And I've just never looked back. It's sort of turned out my brain can work well within solving the problems that we have to solve. And the rest, as they say, is sort of history, really.
Right, right. Yeah, and I'm just reviewing your qualifications, and it looks like you graduated very high in your class during the formative years of your training. So yes. Congratulations. I'm not surprised to hear that people gravitated towards you and your intelligence and your passion for the field. So you call it luck, my friend, but I'm sure it was well-earned.
Well, like I said, to be perfectly honest, my placement year really helped with that. So my education, it was good. It was well-grounded, but I still didn't quite get what the industry was like. Mm-hmm. And when I went out into industry and had a year doing the work, I got well invested into the team. They got right behind me in my development. And when I came back to uni for my final year, I knew that's what I wanted to do. So my sights were set on doing this last year well, because I knew that was the direction I wanted to go in. And had I not had that experience, I don't think I'd have come out of university with a first. And I really think that had a massively positive impact on me going forward.
So when you entered the field after that experience, what were some of the cases that you worked on? Typically, was it litigation matters or a variety of cases? Or
excuse me. Yeah. So very early on, say I was starting off with the police work, essentially. So my main experience of exposure in the industry was lots of imaging, starting off at the collection side of things and learning about taking apart laptops and desktops, learning about that clunking sound that laptops make when you have to pull a little bit harder and it starts to feel uncomfortable, but then they pop out.
Exactly. That's a tense moment.
It is, but you soon learn to adapt to what's needed. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of that, and it was that alongside the just the knowledge of the chain of custody side of things and the auditing side of things, of tracking our activity through and through. And, you know, we'd be writing witness statements for every image that we made of a laptop and the timing that we did, and that would have been QC'd and checked at the end of each report that I wrote. and through that experience, you then sort of progressed through to starting with some analysis and getting some insight into disk level file system type things. And I had some really good mentors who just, again, really took me under their wing to teach me from their experiences how to go about things. And I learnt the method for solving problems. And again, I found that my brain naturally worked well in that sort of environment. So I was able to keep growing with it. And that was the general sort of path I went through.
Right. You mentioned the police a couple times. Like, were you working with the police internally, or were you, do they outsource some of the work to a private company?
Yeah, so I was working for a private company who the police outsourced to, essentially. So their backlog essentially gets so large from a police perspective that they have a number of providers that they would outsource some of this digital forensic work to. And we'd be involved with the computers, the phone analysis, and any other areas from a digital forensic perspective that they needed support. And we'd often, we'd be given a submission, we'd understand what the remit of the investigation was, what we were actually looking for, we'd write a report that would essentially go back to the police, and then we'd support the police with anything further that came from that, including giving evidence in court.
Right. Well, it's interesting that, you know, I find often here when I look at the police and how overburdened they are with digital forensics work, and they just keep it all in-house, and they're overwhelmed and understaffed. And I think there should be some process to vet an outside source and get some assistance specifically in that field, but it doesn't seem to be happening where I am. So I found it interesting that you had that experience. It's very ahead of the times.
Certainly does happen in the UK. And those businesses are well vetted from a quality and security sort of perspective to be able to do the work that they do. It certainly happens. And of course, the other opportunity to help with that backlog is going back to the automation piece as well.
Good point. Yeah, there it is. That was a home run, man. That was quite the segment. Yeah, brilliant. So moving on, you know, we've talked about some of the things that you've done in the past and everything like that. What about looking forward? Where do you see your career going in the future? Do you have any specific goals in mind, or any plans in that regard?
Yeah, it's a good question. So my experience working at Deloitte has been much different from working in the police sector. So I'm now in a much more corporate environment, working with businesses and legal services and those sort of different areas. And for me personally, I find that super interesting. My interest in business is quite high. I find it fascinating just how businesses run and learning about that. And then I also bring with me what is now my experience of all the technology from a forensic, digital forensic perspective through to an e-discovery perspective and working at matters at scale and working with different types of technology, including some of the slightly more wider areas around AI and machine learning and stuff. And I think all of that experience really helps me step into a business to bring that technology and the knowledge of how things work with me to then go and talk to the business to understand what their requirements are and what their needs are, and to really understand how a business would then get the most value out of using that technology, whether it's implementing new things or whether it's refining what they already do. And so now I'm getting more involved from an advisory perspective in terms of supporting businesses either explore wanting to do what they can't already do, or maybe even trying to figure out what they don't know that they can do that they can do, all that sort of that sort of exploratory area from a business perspective. And again, that's really my interest is where those two things align essentially. And I'm very fortunate to be in a position where my career is allowing me to sort of bring strengths in that position now.
Yeah, that's very true. And that consulting is so important to businesses. And one of the challenges that you and I have spoken about is communicating with the business about technology in a way that they're going to understand. And what's your experience been like in that regard?
Yeah, that's right. And it's challenging. It works both ways because you have to communicate to the business, but you also need to communicate to the technical teams as well. And both have their challenges. Let's say both come from very different viewpoints. So my recent training has been more around business analysis and understanding the business context, the reason why businesses do the things they do and how that then aligns to business objectives and strategic goals and that sort of thing. And then as you go further through to KPIs to measure performance, and that sort of side of things. I think there's a really interesting, just an interesting angle really of bringing that business analysis skill set into that specific area.
Right. and blending one of your interests, like you said, you're into the whole business scene. And where does that interest come from, the aspect of
good
business?
Good question. I think it's partly as I've grown older as well. I think over time, I was never a full-on tech person, mm-hmm. personally. Again, I got the logic, I got how stuff worked, and I could write programs because it worked in my head. But I wasn't the kid that was taking apart computers at the age of 10 or whatever. And my dad was, he was an influence on me, but that wasn't really who I was. But I my natural strengths come into around the people side of things. And again, that's where the communication bit is something I naturally find really interesting and mm-hmm. I found is really important to the field of digital forensics. That whole sort of area really has brought me into the position that I'm in now.
Yeah, for sure. I find the communication piece so important. And when a lot of people ask about skill sets to get into the field and they're talking about training and certifications, I always stress the point of communication, because at the end of the day, we're writing reports or we're testifying or whatever the case may be. You have to be very clear about what you did and why. You know, I love the way you've mentioned a few times, you know, the logical aspect of your brain, because you've really got to set it out for people. You know, I was looking for this, I did this, I found this, it means this. Like, yeah. You've got to approach it really logically and set it out clearly and succinctly. So it's very, very important to make everybody understand what exactly you did.
And I think to me, it emphasizes the power of the analogy as well. I think mm-hmm. They take you a long, long way, and especially, you know, in court, I had my back pocket full of file systems and MD5 sort of analogies ready for when the question came. And they're all the common ones, you know, it's this storage file system or fingerprint type thing, you know, it's nothing too special or unique, but it's knowing to bring that to life and helping that bring that subject area to life in a different way, in a relatable way, which is understandable to the listener. And there was two things that really helped me with that. So firstly, at university, again, we was doing a legal subject. I can't quite remember the subject now, but we had to give presentations as a group and individually. And almost every week we were doing presentations. And there was a few of us that just always did them and prepared them. And that just meant we got picked up. So there was at least, I think, 10 consecutive weeks where I was presenting on a certain subject. And that really built up my confidence and ground it in me. I didn't realize what was happening at the time, but it was really been valuable. And then put that on top of my experience of giving evidence in court. Again, you learn a lot about yourself sat outside a courtroom for the first time. And it's quite a terrifying experience, but you actually gain confidence. You know, I've given evidence probably, you know, only about 10, 11, 12 times in total, but on either side of the fence, from defence and prosecution. And I've just become more and more confident in myself to be able to stand there and effectively communicate. And now I'm starting to see how that can drive into more value from a business perspective, where I can do the same thing essentially. It's a strong skill set, and it's a strong skill set, especially in a world where a lot of analysts are naturally very technically minded, and obviously there's a huge need for that technical mindset. But also, yeah, that if you can bring that communication skill set in as well, it becomes really, really powerful. And it's not something that everybody would naturally say they would have, but it is something you can also learn as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a naturally developing skill at all. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's not like people have it or they don't. I mean, you can practice it, and the experience you got of doing those presentations obviously helps with that and gives you a comfort level, but it's certainly important to develop.
And there are public speaking clubs out there, you know, debating clubs, all that sort of stuff, that you can learn these skills if you're not. It's like singing. It's a confidence thing.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who have taken those kind of public speaking courses, and I don't know anybody who's found it to be a bad experience. And I applaud somebody for saying, this is a weakness that I have. I'm nervous talking in front of people, and I'm going to go do something about it. I love that attitude in people. Yeah. So
you will learn so much about yourself.
You do. Yeah, absolutely. Face your fears too.
Absolutely.
Now, Steve, I noticed too, you're involved in some charitable organization. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what you guys do? I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, there's quite a fair bit I do get involved with. So, I mean, I'm actually involved with a church in our local area, and that's the charity where I'm now essentially standing as a non-executive director, and I'm essentially the finance director in that role. And again, it's an interesting conversation because I've really been able to bring a lot of my business learning into that role, and it's given me a lot of confidence about my own ability to adapt quickly in a different environment where I'm suddenly representing numbers and figures to a board. And yes, it's a charity, but you know, there's still a considerable sum with staff who I'm now, you know, paying every month. And it's a very different world I suddenly threw myself in, but I found those data skills don't go away. You know, I'm manipulating accounts and books to create reports, again, communicating to the board the technical details of the accounts. And I had to pick up a bit of knowledge myself around some of the accounting bits that I wasn't too familiar with. I had a strong interest in personal finance, but that was sort of my main experience. And that's been a real good success, to be honest, because, I've then been able to help some of the rest of the board uncover some of the financial sort of findings that's really helped them drive the charity in different directions. And it's also helped us navigate COVID, which, as you can imagine, it turned up the level of scrutiny on how we were doing each month just to get right. by through that as a charity. Again, it's a great role. It's put me into a non-executive director position, which is fantastic, and that's opening different avenues for me. And at the same time, I've it's built my confidence no end by using those skills in a very, very different environment. I'm taking them with me. I completed the Three Peaks last weekend, which is a UK challenge for climbing three mountains in a 2-day period for charity. And we took 25 people from the business with us, and we've raised £35,000 doing that this last
congratulations.
Weekend. So, again, that sort of charity side of things, I think it's whether within me, whether personally, whether it's something I feel like I should give as just being a member of society, that's one thing. But I just genuinely think there's opportunities to grow as an individual by exposing yourself to different areas and different experiences like that, whether it's from a business perspective or from a personal perspective. And by stepping out, taking a risk and stepping into something new, you'll only positively gain something, whether it's a positive event or a negative event, you'll still come out the other end with something new and an experience that you didn't have before. So, I personally love taking those steps and those risks and seeing where it takes me.
Yeah, it shows in when you speak about it and you kind of light up when you talk about the things that you love. I think that's really cool. You're obviously, like, I got to tell you, so obviously just talking to you, you're obviously articulate and intelligent and capable. You found a lot of professional things that are well suited to your skill set, and I love to see that. Personally, do you have this, you must have the same drive in your personal life or your interests and passions personally?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So at home, I've got two kids as well. So they're young now, one's 3 and one's 6 months.
Very congratulations.
And it's striking this balance. I'm someone I find it hard to say no to things. And one of my feedback points as I've been developing as a person is to say no to things, because you just can't take everything on. I'm quite good at delegating, but I like being driven. I like gaining experiences. I like growing as a person. And again, as I'm getting older, I also found I really like developing others and seeing them grow as well. And I think all this sort of drives who I am and what I try to do with my life and at work. All at the same time, whilst trying to not put pressure on myself. And that's, again, that's one of the main things. And again, it's part of my, I go to church, so part of my faith and part of my life that comes through that is some values, which are that there is more to life than work. So it's trying to get that balance. And we all have our different ways of working through that and getting that balance right. But being content with what I've got, whilst also trying to be driven for new experiences and to grow as a person. And it does tend to follow me where I go quite naturally, which is a lovely place to be in personally.
Oh, it's amazing. It sounds like you've got a lot of really positive things dialed into your life over there. I'm really happy for your success, and I hope it continues personally and professionally into the future. You've earned it, and I'm sure you're going to do just amazing in the future.
Thank you.
Yeah. So Steve, I wanted to thank you for being on the program and spending some time with us. It was great to talk to you and hear more about you and your professional life and your personal endeavors, and you're growing as a person and doing new things and exploring your interests. So I really enjoyed this, and I hope you did too.
Brilliant. Thank you for your time. It's really great to share. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Okay. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
despite all the news about data breaches, ransomware attacks, email fraud, and insider threats. Most businesses don't have a plan when it comes to a cyber attack. In fact, most businesses don't know who to call when the worst happens. That costs them valuable time and a lot of money. Get a plan today. Go to dfiforensics.ca and learn about our custom-built incident response plans. We'll prepare a document that will guide your organization through every step of a data breach. Learn more today.